Welcome to the X29 Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Metters. X29 is committed to church planting all around the world. And this means that we're committed to planting in the suburbs. This means we're committed to planting in the inner cities. And this means we're committed to planting churches in hard places. And this is why Matthew Spandler Davison.
You got it.
Joins the podcast today. That's it. MSD.
You got it. Yeah.
He's here. I was nervous because we were at a X29 interest launch earlier, and you made a little joke about sometimes, you know, just call me MSD. Sometimes people mispronounce my name, and I was like, oh man, I'm going to mispronounce it. He's right here. But here we have Matthew Spandler Davison on the X29 podcast, our director of the Church in Hard Places initiative. So it's good to have you, MSD. How are you, bro?
Great. Yeah. Doing pretty good. So good to be back with humans again.
That's right. Yeah, we're here recording live at the Gospel Coalition Conference here in Indianapolis, and it's fun to be here and to see each other. And even though we're on staff, we haven't seen each other in a long time.
Nope.
And so to be here recording, it's just fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And I'm grateful that you're coming on the show to talk about our initiative to plant churches in hard places. But before we dive into that, MSD, for people out there who don't know who you are, maybe they're not super familiar with you, why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I pastor a church in a place called Bardstown, Kentucky, which is just south of Louisville. It's bourbon capital of the world. If you've heard of Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, Heaven Hill, Four Roses, but it all comes from the town that I'm in. So I've been pastoring there for, I planted the church there 16 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Redeemer Fellowship Church. And so, but as you may be able to tell, I don't have a Kentucky accent.
Yeah, you don't sound like you're from Kentucky at all.
No, praise God.
More Texan. Yeah.
Texan, no. So I am originally from, I grew up just outside Aberdeen, Scotland, born in Stavanger, Norway. My dad is from Ireland, mom's from England, wife is from Mobile, Alabama.
So, wow.
So I'm all over the place now living in Kentucky. So.
Okay. How did you end up in planting in Bardstown, Kentucky, from Aberdeen, Scotland to Bardstown, Kentucky?
Oh man, long story, short version is I moved to the States to, initially I did an internship at Capitol Hill Baptist Church with Mark Devers. That's what got me to the States. Didn't know then about going to seminary or Bible college. I was 21, I was thinking, you know, probably should go to Bible college. And there was back then no real solid, healthy Bible college options for me in the UK. So Mark said, you should go to Southern Seminary. So I went off to Southern in Louisville. Tracy, my wife, got married, moved to Kentucky. Looking for a place to live. I sold my house in Scotland, so I wanted to buy a house in Kentucky. And the guy sitting next to me in my church history class was a realtor from Bardstown, Kentucky.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And so he took me to Bardstown, showed us some houses. All right, we'll buy a house here. Now, the town smells like whiskey, and it looks beautiful, so we'll buy a house here. So we bought a house. And then after moving there, there was no real, at that time, strong, healthy church in the community. It's predominantly Roman Catholic, about 80% Roman Catholic town. And so we begun a Bible study in our home became a church.
Wow.
So that was 2004 when we launched our church.
Amazing. So 2004, and now you've been pastoring there in Kentucky all this time. Mm-hmm. And now you join the staff of X29 and serving also in our Church in Hard Places initiative. So, so for people out there who maybe aren't super familiar with it, what is our Church in Hard Places initiative? What are we trying to do here?
So if I step back a little bit before Church in Hard Places, myself and Mez McConnell, so Mez, many people know Mez, he's a church planter in the in Nidri, a really rough scheme, poor community there in Edinburgh, Scotland. So we started a ministry called 20 Schemes, which is specifically church planting in Scotland's poorest communities. When I left Scotland to move to the States, I didn't want to be that guy who's going to leave the UK and never go back, knowing that there's, you know, I felt, I didn't become a Christian until I was 18, 19. I knew that Scotland is a very few believers in Scotland, didn't have any believers in my immediate family. In my high school, I didn't know a Christian. So I didn't want to be that guy leaving Scotland and never going back.
Yeah.
And so I always felt burdened for seeing churches planted in Scotland. So I met Mez I think 2011, and we just started thinking about what does it look like to see healthy churches planted in the unreached, unengaged, poor communities of Scotland, see conversion growth, train up Indigenous leaders, see churches planted. And so we launched a ministry called 20 Schemes in 2012 with the vision to see those churches planted, specifically in urban poor contexts. Then off the back of that,
What is a scheme? I know some people will listen to like what I don't, especially our United States listeners or maybe our Australian listeners. Yeah. Like, what is a scheme?
A
scheme is like a bad thing.
Yeah. So
like you're trying to steal
something
or something.
We don't have 20 devious plans to take over Scotland. So a scheme is, in the US you'd use the word housing projects. So you think of projects as social housing, something like government developed or social housing provision. So a scheme is a housing scheme. In England, they'll call them housing estates. It's a place of government subsidized or government owned social housing. Typically in Europe, social housing tends to be on the edges of the cities. And so we didn't have the same white flight phenomenon that you had in the US where you kind of inner city poverty.
Right.
Most poverty in Europe is actually on the margins of the cities. And so that's where you'll find the schemes. Historically, in the after the Industrial Revolution, a housing scheme would have developed around an area of industry, so a coal mine or a shipbuilding yard or a railway terminal. So some kind of area of industry, a scheme would have developed to provide housing for the working class. But following the 1950s, 60s, kind of heavy industrialized manufacturing economies kind of collapsed and made way for service sector economies and left these communities blighted by poverty and everything that comes with poverty. So drug abuse, alcoholism, addiction, abuse of all forms kind of began to set into some of these communities. What you don't find, though, in these areas of generational poverty, particularly in Scotland, I think most of Western Europe, is a church reaching into those communities. And so that's why we started 20 Schemes, to raise up church planting teams to move into those unreached, unengaged communities. A scheme could have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people living in a one square mile block community. And so so we launched that, but then we began recognizing that actually, there are communities like this, unengaged poor communities like this, all over the world. So favelas, barrios, areas of indigenous populations in Canada, in Australia, there's communities where there are pockets of poverty that are often unengaged by disciple making church plants, healthy church plants in those communities. In fact, most poor communities, there may be church activity happening within them. So Mercy Ministry, food banks, shelters, addiction programs, kids clubs, those things are all good. But what you don't tend to find is disciple-making, Indigenous leadership developing, gospel churches in the midst of those communities. And so 20 Schemes is just about Scotland. Acts 29 is a global church planting network, family of churches. Both Mess and I are Acts 29 church planters. And so we thought, well, let's see if we can basically expand this globally, but we want to do that as part of Acts 29. So about 4 years ago now, we launched Church in Hard Places as an initiative of Acts 29 to be a catalyst for church planting amongst the unengaged poor globally around the world.
Yeah, I love that we have this initiative because it's one of those elements of ministry and of the kingdom that is just not going to be on your forefront, on the front of your mind, unless you live there.
Yep. Yep.
And, I live in the suburbs, do ministry in the suburbs. And so it's not a hard place economically. It's not a hard place at all, categorically, in the ways that we think of church in hard places. And so I love that we have this initiative just to bring it to our minds and remind us.
The phrase hard places, right? It's a relative term. And so, but the way I describe it is that, there's a part of your city or your community where life is just hard.
Yeah.
It's harder to get a job. It's harder to get access to decent healthcare. It's harder to get access to a good school. It's harder to get access to, decent food in the grocery store. This is how to get access to, a car and driving licenses and so forth. So the areas of the city where the life is just harder for those who live in those communities. And it's also harder to find a healthy church in those parts of our cities, our communities. That's rural and urban, and so there are rural communities as well that feel just as remote and just as poor. So I'm thinking of resource poverty, not just kind of inner city poverty, but there are certainly rural communities as well that suffer from the same. So you think of Appalachia, West Virginia, you think of kind of rural villages in Asia that would deal with some of the same kind of social issues that inner city poverty would deal with as well. So what does it look like to do evangelism, discipleship, and developing leaders in a context like that? And this is what Church in Our Places is seeking to do.
What are some things that you think would be helpful for listeners that to kind of just help them catch a vision, this is what a hard place looks like. Mm-hmm. These are some of the experiences of what it's like to be in a hard place and why we need churches there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, socially, there's going to be there's a commonality of social issues in hard places. So you often find a prevalence of addictions, a prevalence of mental health issues, a high degree of abuse, whether that is domestic abuse or a sexual abuse that maybe people have experienced or grown up with. You'll find a absence often of men, kind of male leadership, male headship, for multiple reasons. And then you find all the issues related to poverty that may be true in those communities in terms of access to services and to resources. So that those things are true if I'm in São Paulo or in Cape Town or in Edinburgh, Scotland, or in Atlanta. I can define that there are certain social issues that are true in areas of concentrated poverty, which we call the hard places. And which means, a lot of our church planting training and resources and networks and conferences, books, they tend to be gearing people to plant churches in resource wealthy contexts. And they make a lot of assumptions about the communities that we're going to plant in, that you're going to plant in a community where, there's a mom and a dad, there's a husband and a wife, that people get to have a job, that people send their kids to a decent school.
Right.
So we make a lot of assumptions about the communities where we're sending church planters to. And you could tell that by reading books on church planting or going to conferences on church planting. But that's just not true. For a third of the world's population lives in deep poverty. Now, deep poverty is $1.25 a day. Hmm. So a third of the world lives in deep poverty. 46% of the world live in remote rural communities. So you think of India, China, Russia, you think of remote, sparsely populated populations. 40% of the world's population still lives in remote rural communities that are often cut off from the city centers and the urban centers. You think of one in eight Christians are living in a context where there's real persecution that they're facing every day, closed countries, hard to reach context. And so if we are going to truly have a heart for the nations and a heart for reaching the least and the last and the lost, then we've got to be able to answer the question, how do we plant churches in, contexts like, the slums of Mumbai or the, the West End of Atlanta? How do we plant churches in that context? And how do we do it well in a sustainable way, in a healthy way that's going to view our church planters in those communities? It's almost like missionaries to those communities. They're going to need support for a long time. And we often, the 3-year model of church planting, where we're going to support a guy for 3 years, they're going to get some funding for a little while. We're going to be heavily invested in the front end, but high expectations of them in terms of the number of people that gather, the number of people that attend, the kind of staff they have, the activities they do. No wonder we're not planting in these hard-to-reach places.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. I don't think it works in most places, but it certainly doesn't work in the hard-to-reach urban or remote rural context.
Yeah. Man, so what are some of the things that the X29 Church in Hard Places is, how are we practically, tangibly resourcing, training in these contexts to help these guys plant churches there?
So the primary thing we have going on is, it's called the Church in Hard Places Apprenticeship. It's a 2-year apprenticeship for indigenous leaders who are already in a hard place. Yeah. So we don't want them to leave their community to go and get training. Many of them just wouldn't be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to get access to training. But even if they could, they would be trained and equipped to do ministry in a context unfamiliar to them, or they would just not go back. right, to where they came from. And so we want to provide training in context. So the Tertiary Places Apprenticeship provides, it's done, it's delivered in a regional context, in a regional cohort. So we have 200 apprentices around the world. They gather in small groups of 10 to 15 apprentices in their region. So we have an East Africa group, we have a Southern Africa group, we've got a Brazilian group, we have a Latin American group in their language, and it's peer-to-peer. So it's led by an indigenous leader from that context doing ministry to that context. That indigenous leader who's the cohort leader is an Acts 29 church planter member. And so those apprentices will they'll receive a monthly book, they'll have a monthly class meeting, a discussion, they'll attend a retreat together where we'll provide training and preaching and ecclesiology and church planting strategy. And so we're providing pretty heavy investment in them over the course of that 2 years. It doesn't cost them anything. It's all provided to them by Acts 29. As a resource to them. They get a library of resources. But what's, I think, the most valuable aspect of the apprenticeship, it's not just the library of resources and the, you know, the face-to-face training. It's the relationships they're developing as they go. Because what's going to keep them from going back to the prosperity gospel that they came from, or going back to kind of a liberal social gospel, whatever they came from, what's going to keep them from going back there is the relationships they develop over time, over the 2 years. And our hope is at the end of the two-year apprenticeship, there'll be what we call assessment ready. Right now, Acts 29 assessment, it assumes a lot of people. It assumes a level of knowledge. It assumes a ability to get to a place. It assumes a lot. So there's so many hurdles right now within the 8-9 assessment that could prevent somebody from a poor context, either remote or urban, to even get in to the network. That's why we don't have the diversity that we desire to have as a family of churches. And so what we're trying to do is use this apprenticeship as a pathway to assessment. We're trying to remove some of those roadblocks to help them get into the family of churches.
Man, I love that. That's so exciting to hear. Just practical, on the ground, in context, and an apprenticeship, a discipleship model to really train these kids up.
It's great to see it. It's great to see it on the ground. I love what I do because I get to go. So a couple weeks ago, I was in Dominican Republic with six DR church planters, working with them, seeing them preach and teach and learn together. And their passion for the scriptures come alive. I was in Nairobi a couple months ago with 30 guys from all over East Africa, Uganda, Kenya, Rwanda. A guy from Ethiopia, from Addis Ababa, coming in, again, learning these things together, and then growing together, developing brotherhood, bonds, friendships together. And so it's really exciting to be a part of it.
That's so cool. That brotherhood is such a huge piece, and Acts 29 really does provide that in such a unique way. I know that, I mean, some of my best friends in ministry and in life are Acts 29 pastors and Acts 29 brothers and sisters that have linked arms to see the gospel spread through church planting all around the world. It's so huge.
Yeah. So what we do is, so we did the apprenticeship. We also do what we call Church in Hard Places workshops. So we'll go to a city, Mayor McConnell, myself, maybe some other of our cohort leaders will put on a workshop for talking about how to disciple people with addictions, how to deal with issues of abuse and trauma, how to do leadership development in a poor context. So we deal with issues quite relevant and specific to hard places. So we do a Church Hard Places workshop in a city, let's say Cape Town, Sydney, Detroit.
Okay.
We'll put on that workshop. The purpose of that workshop is twofold. One is to help churches catch a vision for the poor on their own doorsteps. So catch a vision beyond mercy ministry and think about disciple-making ministries in a poor context. But then we're also trying to identify who's already there. You know, so we go to Cape Town, we have this event. That's how we identify our apprentices. All right, this guy, he's from that community. He's teachable. Let's plug him into our cohort and let's spend the next 2 years investing in him. He wouldn't make assessment right now. He's just not there theologically, or he's not there in terms of his level of training or competency. But over 2 years, perhaps we can get him to that point. A lot of guys who are doing ministry from an urban poor context or to an urban poor context, they, in many ways, they teaching heresy in some way, but they're not heretics. And that's the difference, right?
Yes, yes.
So a heretic is somebody who is practicing heresy and who is convictionally teaching something that's heretical. A false teacher that Paul warns us against has had nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
But a lot of our guys that we're working with, they're teaching heresy because it's the only thing they've ever heard.
Right.
Because actually most of our poor communities have been the theological wolves, the you know, the prosperity gospel, the kind of the crazies preying on poor communities and teaching something utterly false. That's the only thing they know. And those who are from a reform perspective, those who are the theologically robust guys, we've kind of abandoned them. So,
yeah.
And, you know, this got this theological famine happening in poor communities all over the world. And we're leaving the wolves to savage those communities because we're not going in. And more than just a 1 week mission trip, we're going to go in and provide his training to these pastors. No, we're saying, no, we're providing a 2 year apprenticeship where we're going to come in, get to know these guys, support them. So workshops, apprenticeship. And then once they join Acts 29, get plugged into regional cohorts and develop ongoing partnerships with other 89 churches.
That's so good. It is so needed rather than just these one hit trainings.
Yep.
That long standing development, true growth and discipleship of these pastors to really serve them. Because you're so right, man. Like, there's a difference between just being wrong and being a heretic.
Yep. Yep.
Like, absolutely. You and I, I'm sure, throughout our life Christ.
We all said dumb things.
Yes. And we've all been wrong.
Believed at some time things, you know, develop as we developed, learned to discover they're untrue. You know, the thing that's really important about the way Church on Places is developing these leaders is that it's not led by a white Western guy who's coming in to provide this training. We, as Acts 29, we are equipping and resourcing an indigenous guy from that community who is an 89 member that is providing leadership to those other church planters in those communities.
Awesome.
So we're very much a resource. Even when I go to these intensives in these regions, I'm not the one presenting, and I may present a couple of things, but it's the voice and the face of the training we're providing, being a South African in South Africa, East African, Indian, when we're in Mumbai, that we're equipping these guys to do the work of training up leaders in their context.
Mm. I love that, man. You made a little comment a second ago, and you also said something similar at the interest launch about how, you know, it's good that we do mercy ministries. Mm-hmm. That we look at these hard places, maybe in our cities, maybe in Houston or in Atlanta or in, I don't know, in another city all around the world, New York, Mumbai, to do food pantries and feeding the homeless and blankets and socks. And those are good things. But why do we need to also consider, we need to plant churches in these hard places and not just do the parachute drops of supplies?
Yep. You know, it's great to send a mission team to go and work in an orphanage for a week, but wouldn't it be even better to send a mission team to help support and raise up indigenous leaders and church planters in that community and to provide support to them. And so what we're saying is that those, you know, there are some good things that Christians do, good things,
orphanage
care, you know, food, you know, dig a well. Those are good things. We should be doing those things. And what I'm saying is that those are inadequate. Those that shouldn't be the end goal. Often those are a means to a greater end, but the greater end is go therefore and make disciples.
That's right.
That's the end. And how do we make disciples? We plant churches. And so your mercy ministry, your global mission strategy, better have its end goal being disciple making through the development of healthy churches in those communities. And, you know, the reality is Christians, particularly in North America, are spending billions of dollars on mercy ministries and overseas missions with very little to show for it when it comes to disciple making and church planting. And and I think this we can do better than this. And this you know, if we examine the fruit, then we can say what is the fruit of the millions of dollars that were spent in this work globally. There is better that can be done. It doesn't mean that we pull out because we're the problem. No, we don't pull out. We just pivot and think more, have more of a strategic disciple-making strategy for the places that we're connecting with and partnering with.
Yeah. When you talk about fruit, I'd love to hear, and I know listeners would love to hear too, some of the fruit and stories and just, you know, evidences of God's mercy and the Church on Hard Places initiative that you could tell us about, some stories you've seen.
Yeah, man. I mean, one of my favorite guys is Gabe Cole. I think we've written an article about him on X19 blog, so you can look his name up. But he's a church planter in Liberia. I mean, his community is just incredibly poor, war-torn through civil war in West Africa. People grew up in child soldiers, a savage, brutal history in that community. But Gabe was pastoring a church that has 500 people in it, big church. But it turns out he's preaching a false gospel. And so he reaches out to us. He wants to get some training, so he joins our apprenticeship. I remember when we asked him we asked all of our apprentices to preach a sermon, so we give him some sermon feedback. We asked him to preach from, I think, Philippians, but he'd never opened a commentary before. He didn't even know that where Paul was when he wrote Philippians. There's a lot of things we assume that people have access to, but he didn't have any access to any of those resources. He'd never read a commentary before, and he's doing this ministry. He's got a church, but he's got no training, no resources. He's teaching things that are untrue. So over 2 years, he tells me, I'm finally preaching. He would say that this has totally changed, not just him, but it's changed his church.
Wow.
He's preaching a Christ-centered gospel. He's preaching an expository sermons, and he's seeing his church come alive, become healthy. He's lost people because of it, who have been driven away, who are looking more for kind of that prosperity message. Some people have left, but the church that he's now leading is a healthy, Christ-exalting, gospel-loving church. So I love Gabe's story. He's planting other churches. He's, sends me WhatsApp messages all the time. Man, we're sending out church planters in this community, in just incredibly poor context.
Yeah.
So I can tell those stories again and again and again of guys. And so we're in a process of discovery. I want to discover who's already there. So Gabe in Liberia, Mario in the Cape Flats, and Dilvan up near the Amazon in Brazil. Who's already there? Let's get alongside them and let's help them to grow and to develop and then to reproduce church planters in their regions.
So wonderful, man. Such a great work that God has you and others in this initiative. So encouraging, man. I love it. Okay, I imagine that you've got some crazy stories just from your travels around the world. As we've been talking, it's no doubt you've been all over the place. You travel a ton. So is there any kind of crazy, wild stories you've got?
Oh, man. So so probably the place where I got to the point where I was not convinced I was coming home would be when I was in India. India, this increasingly violence against believers, against Christians, increasing hostility, Hindu nationalism, mobs forming it. So there's real persecution happening in India. I was flying in there to do a pastor's conference, and I flew into Mumbai, it's a city, felt pretty secure, pretty safe, and then do an overnight train to the next city, and then had to do an overnight bus. So it's me and another guy who is a local, is a missionary in India. So an overnight bus. An overnight bus in India is as terrible as it sounds right now. And so we're doing this overnight bus. The bus had to stop and pull over somewhere in the desert to let people off to use the restroom. But there wasn't a restroom. Just the woman went one side of the bus and the guys go the other side. Well, when we get to go back on, they won't let us back on the bus because we're the only Westerners on the bus. So they surround us, this mob of guys surround us, start yelling at us in Hindi. Basically, who are you? Who are you? Why are you on this bus? Where are you going? And start yelling at us, thinking, I don't know what they're thinking, that we're spies or something.
Right.
And so I got my doctorate from Southern. So I said, I'm a doctor. The other guy the missionary was a nurse. So we're medics. He's a nurse.
Oh,
so they let us back on the bus.
Ooh.
Like, we don't want to die in the middle of some desert out here. And so we got back in the bus, get to the city where the conference was. And the host pastor comes by in his little beat up car, picks us up, takes us to his house. I mean, this guy lives in poverty. So the house, no windows, no indoor plumbing. We're in his house, around his kitchen table. And he said, well, I need to let you know that there's been some threats made against the meeting, the conference. So some pastors have chosen not to come. And I said, what do you mean threats? So, well, there's been some violence in our city. And so, so we've made some arrangements that basically when you get there, we have a register, a list of people who we're going to let in the building. We're only going to let them into the building. We're going to keep somebody on the roof of the building to look out, to make sure there's no mob coming down the street. There's a door behind the podium And he'll send a signal. If you need to get out, you go out that door, the car will be there with the driver in the whole time. So if he sends
Holy
a signal,
cow.
You run, get out in the car, and the car will get away. So that if the mob comes, they can't get in and they can't get to you. And so I'm like, oh, wow, okay. That's not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So I remember that night, I texted my elders back home, said, just pray. Pretty scary out here, so may not make it home. So just pray for me. I remember going to bed that night, just kind of making my peace with Jesus. Now, if I'm supposed to die in the middle of the Indian desert at a pastor's conference, that's not a bad way to go.
So there are worse ways.
I'm okay with that, but I'd rather not.
Yeah, so I'd like to see my kids get older.
Like to get home. And so I remember going to bed that night, praying, sharing my elders, asking them, but I didn't tell my wife till I got home. I think that was wise.
Yeah.
And then the next morning I woke up. the women of the church came to the pastor's house to pray over me.
Wow.
And they, I don't understand what they're saying. They're praying in Hindi, but they are wailing. They are crying. They are weeping over me as I depart the house.
Oh my goodness.
And so then I leave. There's the, oh, by the way, the missionary guy that came with me said, no joke, I'm just going to stay here. I think it'd be better to pray and fast for you today.
Yeah, I'm out, man.
He's out. So he checked out. I'm like, what? You're not even coming with me?
That's
so
hilarious.
Let's see there. Get in the car with the pastor. We drive to the church. And then I look up and there's a banner hanging outside the church with my name and face on it.
Oh, man.
What are you thinking? And so then I get in. Anyway, we get into the church. Nothing happens. It was great. Once I started rolling, I was good. Kind of mind at ease. We did make the 2-day conference into 1-day conference, and I did leave early
right,
that night
right.
and make it home. Turned out though that the pastor did end up getting, they were concerned about a mob coming, but he got arrested by the police. Thing is, there's Christians in India. They have no protection because often the police are the ones who are persecuting them as well. And so if a mob comes up against them, who are they going to go to?
Right.
You can't tell the police. The police are often on the side of the mob.
Yep.
And so the poor guy, the pastor, he did get detained, beaten up. And so he's a really good guy, faithful brother, serving in a really hard place. And so I made it out, but I wasn't convinced I was going to make it out, but by God's grace I did.
Okay. Well, as we come and land the plane, this is the final three questions I ask on every episode.
I remember these questions.
Okay.
I thought about this every time.
Okay, first one. What's your go-to coffee drink?
Go-to coffee drink is Americano.
Americano, okay.
Yep.
Normal.
Black,
standard.
Nothing in it. Strong.
I love it.
Yep.
All right. I'm doing them out of order, so it's okay. Second one. A book you've read recently that you'd recommend.
Ooh. Book I've read recently that I'd recommend. I love biographies. So I'm reading some biographies right now, but a great, resource that I've recently read. If you heard of, Brian Croft, books he's putting out, I love his trilogy. So The Pastor's Ministry, Pastor's Soul, Pastor's Family, just incredibly helpful books, that he's put out.
Yeah. Perfect. I'll put links to those in the show notes, and listeners, you can go find those. You can go buy them on Amazon or at 10 of those, and you can find them there. And also I'll put a link to some of the Church and Heart Places articles and stories that we have there on the X29 blog. Okay. Final question. Your favorite verse on our scripture.
Oh man.
And you know, it could be life verse, could be a verse that just ministers to you, or maybe it's in the season. That's just been such a real blessing to you. So what immediately comes to mind when I ask that?
Then my joke response to this question is 1 Timothy 5:13, because it's bringing me a little wine for my stomach. Because I live with chronic pain, because I have chronic medical issues, and I live with chronic pain. And so that's always my joke response to me. What's your life verse? Oh, yeah, bring me a little wine for my stomach.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, bro, thank you so much for coming on the X29 podcast. It's
appreciate
great.
It.
Great just to hear how God's at work and what he's doing. And so I'm grateful for you. If people wanted to follow you on social media or any, where would you point them?
Twitter at Spandler Davison. So Spandler, SpandlerDavison at Spandler Davison.
Perfect. You can find links to that in the show notes as well. Or you can go and go follow MSD, myself, and X29 in all our different places. So remember, listeners, let's keep planting churches to the ends of the earth. And that involves also these very hard places.